Good morning and welcome to your wake-up call. My name is Tana Hartman. I'm your host today. Our engineer is Dick Paddock, and our guest today is Pete McDowell, back again to talk with us more about Cliffside and Duke Energy and what's happening with coal-powered plants in North Carolina. Welcome, Pete.
Thanks very much, Tana.
NC Warren has, you're the program director for NC Warren, and NC Warren is focusing right now on stopping coal burning in North Carolina. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
Among other things.
Among other things. But that is a primary focus right now, as I understand it. And we talked with you, last week, a few weeks ago, and then you were on the air recorded last week again, talking a little bit about what had happened in Copenhagen. But we were going to go from Copenhagen now to North Carolina. What's happening? We know that coal-fired power plants generate about half of America's electricity, but they contribute something like 80% of the total greenhouse gases. And each time we bring a new coal-fired power plant online, it is the equivalent of about 600,000 cars on the road.
Well, let me revise that. The Cliffside plant, which is 850 megawatts, with a big plant, is equivalent annually of about 1 million cars.
A million cars.
Right.
Okay.
But what just to go back and hit the context for a minute, if that's okay. What Copenhagen was about, of course, was the whole issue of global warming and climate change, and it was an attempt to reach an international agreement, and it failed. There was some pledges by the U.S., by Obama, and by China, and some other countries that said that they were going to try to limit the rise in global temperature to 2 degrees centigrade, which most scientists say is dangerously high and would be and
two is high.
Yeah, the African and many of the other underdeveloped countries said that they're in very serious trouble if it goes over 1.5 degrees centigrade.
Really? Okay, because my understanding had been that 3 was the dangerous, but if we could keep it under 2, we would be okay.
Unless you live in Africa or live on an island in the Pacific, in which case you're having those parliamentary sessions underwater.
Right.
So, I mean, the bald fact is that we're headed toward what we know is a cliff in the fog, and the question is, when do you start putting the brakes on? And we don't know exactly when you start hitting the tipping points, and the tipping points are things like the permafrost melting, releasing methane, which is 22 times the greenhouse gas effect of CO2, and the Greenland ice sheet melting and slipping into the sea, and all those there's a whole series of kinds of things where each one has a positive feedback loop, and when it starts to go, you have other things starting to go, and you really have an uncontrollable greenhouse gas situation. We don't know exactly where those places are, but the best guess, according to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change a few years back, was saying we need to start reducing our overall greenhouse gas by about 2015. And if y'all, I mean, we're 2010 right now, and if business as usual continues, which it do tend to do in a capitalist economy that is all about growth, it's going to be a huge, probably the biggest challenge the planet has faced. Yes. To try to get beyond the growth, the the runaway growth model is what we've got right now, which is really devastating the planet environmentally. And get to another model of green growth, the kind of growth that is sane growth
and sustainable.
And as we all know, we don't have the politics in place to do that. Certainly not internationally, and certainly not nationally. I mean, right now, the world is depending, very interestingly, really on the U.S. Senate. And by that I mean, you've got, first of all, we have a institution called the Senate, in which, with the filibuster rule, in which essentially the folks, senators representing 11% of the population, can stop any kind of bill. And we, as we've just seen with health care there, it is a one vote. Democrats have 60, and they came up with a hodgepodge health care bill. The climate bill is probably dead, and it's probably fine that it's dead, because it was as Jim Hansen, the foremost climatologist,
he's the NASA scientist,
has said, if the present cap and trade climate bill succeeds, we fail. it does way too little, and the whole cap and trade system, as has been seen in Europe and other cases, is the word is gameable, totally gameable.
I read it's been an unmitigated failure.
Yeah, that's right. And the reason it's failure is lobbyists and countries and companies play games with it, and you can jiggle it all so it works for you and fails for everybody else. that's the situation. And given that situation, as you were saying in the lead up, we have got to crank back CO2 in this country, and the first place to start is coal plants. So not only do you have to, number one, stop any new coal plants, and that's where Cliffside comes in, but number two, start phasing out very quickly the coal plants that you've got. So
now, a number have been shut down in the past, or phased out, or
over 100 in the last 3 or 4 years that were on the drawing boards and were supposedly been built have been canceled. I mean, the handwriting is on the wall for those who can see the wall, and unfortunately, Duke Energy can't see the wall. Let me just say one other thing. Front page of the News and Observer today, EPA is promulgated regulations that are out there for review now that would about ozone, which is smog, and which is largely from cars and coal plants, and if they pass, every major city in North Carolina except Wilmington would be out of compliance. So, I mean, how much more do we need to know that coal plants are crazy, and that the building a new coal plant is crazy, and the question is, our task is shutting down, begin to shut down the ones we have.
Okay, but playing devil's advocate, we need energy, right? Our whole civilization is predicated on, the use of fossil fuels at this point. But so, what do we do instead? What is the alternative?
Think of it, what we're doing is this. We look at our society and economy as a house. And the question is, how do we keep it warm on cold nights like this? You're right, we have to have the energy. And what we're talking about, what Duke is talking about right now, is buying a new heat pump a bigger heat pump, putting in a higher capacity heat pump. And then we look around and say, wait a minute, half the windows are open. Why don't, and that's, our energy efficiency is terrible. And has, we have enormous capacity to do energy efficiency. Energy efficiency is the kind of clock gun, weather stripping, blowing in insulation, doing blower door tests for energy audits, all the kinds of stuff that creates many times more jobs than building a coal plant was. The average coal plant, you know, employs about 30 folks. So once it's up. So what if in just to contain the metaphor instead of a or continue the metaphor? Well, let's call that heat pump a little coal plant that's outside your house, but it vents inside.
Oh, that's good.
So maybe there's more than one reason, and your dog is starting to cough, your kids are coughing, and your wife isn't looking too good. So, I was not feeling too good.
This is all attractive.
So what do we do? What do we do, guys?
Yeah, what do we do?
We maybe need to start shutting down the coal plants just as fast as we can, and rebooting our society with energy efficiency as the number one most important kind of thing that we can do. Okay. And number two is ramping up renewable energy just as fast as we can.
Okay. But there is a lot of talk about transitioning through via natural gas, but that has its own set of problems.
Yeah, it do.
What do you think about what do you think about that? I mean, is that what they're going to do? Is 'cause a number of the plants have gone to natural gas.
Yeah, and there's this great glut of gas right now, and the price of gas, natural gas, is falling very quickly. But the problem is, where it's coming from is a new process called fracking.
Hydraulic fracturing.
Fracking. What fracking is basically injecting water with a bunch of chemicals in it and sand into the ground to open up seams and little cracks and that sort of thing that allows the gas out. The problem is it takes enormous amounts of water, and you inject all these this list of, I think the figure is 240 different chemicals that are proprietary, so that we're not quite sure if we got the right list of them, but that has a lot of chance of polluting major aquifers. And the other thing we're running out of...
Okay, so instead of the coal slurry, you're getting this hydraulic slurry.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So that's where, I mean, the new sources of gas come from fracking or imported gas that comes in on these.
And then you got the transportation issue.
Well, not only transportation issues, but the boats that bring it in are, you know, sort of floating bombs, and because it's compressed natural gas. And
but all the energy it takes just to move it.
Oh, that's another downside. So, you know, natural gas has a number of advantages. It has it's a fossil fuel, which is a major problem. But if you could come up with it cleanly, it gives off about half the greenhouse gases that coal does. That's an advantage. It burns a lot cleaner. That's an advantage. But the question is, where are we getting it from, and how are they getting it? So, you know, it is not the magic bullet at this point. The magic bullet is energy efficiency. That is a whole lot more doable now. It just takes the political will. Let me just talk about that for just a minute, if I could. About 35 groups in the state have gotten behind a bill It's House Bill 1050, and it's called. And it's called. But just remember, NC Saves Energy is the name of the bill. It'll be coming up in the short session, which begins in May. And essentially, what it does is prioritizes. It develops a pool of money from a small, about $1.70 a month fee on top of utility bills, residential utility bills. But that would create about $60 million that would then be used for energy efficiency projects, prioritizing low and moderate income folks and prioritizing creating green jobs. So and this is based on the whole bill is based on a number of other states that do similar kinds of things very successfully.
Successfully. Okay, that was a key, because I was wondering, how do you actually, because a number of other programs that have supposed to been to help or to help, low and moderate income people make some change have failed miserably, and so how?
Well, the difference is, are they independent of the utilities? The utilities, and we're talking Duke and Progress, and in this state as the biggies, have been fighting this. And I'll just give you a little legislative story that I think I mentioned last time. When the bill started to move in the House, going to its first committee, we had the votes in the committee. About 17 or 18 lobbyists from the utilities marched into the legislature in six groups of three, three each, and visited every member of the committee and flipped four of them on us. And that's how it works there. The utilities, for all their green talk, do not want energy efficiency except on their own terms. If they could get super profits from it, they're fine by it. But they're in the business of selling energy. The notion of selling less energy is not appealing to them.
Yes. As we've seen with Duke Energy trying to expand its customer base.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
We're going to need to take a little break here, and we'll be right back, Pete. Just want to tell you that this is your wake-up call brought to you by the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. You can visit our website at WILPF.org. That's WILF, Triangle WILF.org, excuse me, Triangle WILF, WILPF.org. And our underwriter for the show is Internationalist Books at 405 West Franklin Street. They're a volunteer-run collective, a nonprofit bookstore and progressive community center. They're a community-owned cooperative founded in 1981 by political activist Bob Sheldon, still going today. They provide new, used books and magazines on diverse subjects from beat literature to gay and lesbian fiction, alternative health, and political theory. Again, their address is 405 West Franklin Street, and you should visit their website at www.internationalistbooks.org. And we are back with Pete McDowell of NC Warren talking about transitioning from coal-fired power to more sustainable and renewable energy sources.
It is probably the major challenge of our times, because global warming is serious as a heart attack. It's coming on very fast. Kofi Annan, the former president of the UN think tank, said that about 300,000 people had died of climate-related disasters last year. So, actually, it was probably the year before by now, because we're in a new year, aren't we? what just drives me crazy is watching the incredible hoopla about the near miss on a terrorist incident on a plane. Nonstop news for what has it been 10 days now, or and just just as if that's the notion of a plane going down, which obviously would be a real catastrophe, was the biggest thing that's happening. But that would be at 300 people compared to 300,000 that have a, that weren't a near miss.
They they needed something to replace Tiger Woods.
They did, you know.
Right. During the week of, during Copenhagen, Tiger Woods was all over the American media.
That's right.
But Copenhagen.
To me, what we're talking about is political will. We're talking about knowledge. The public has to have the knowledge, which the media is doing a horrendous job, with the exception of great, media like WCLM.
Thank you. Thanks for that. He is not paid. Democracy Now. Yeah, that's right. There are
some. Yeah, and Amy Goodman in Democracy Now, who is doing an absolutely world-class job. But, they're the exceptions. The other part of the political world is obviously politics. And as Jim Hansen, again, the world's probably foremost climatologist, said, the biggest obstacle to controlling climate change is how we finance elections, and that's, we certainly see that in North Carolina. When you look at lobbying and campaign contributions, Democracy North Carolina did a study. It was them a couple of years ago that showed that in lobbying and campaign contributions, the utilities contributed or spent the equivalent of $10,000 per legislator in North Carolina. $10,000 per legislator. Enormous amount of money went to the gubernatorial candidates this time around. Beverly Perdue, while saying that she's so green, she blends in with a grassy background, won't say a peep about Cliffside. Not a peep. Stop Cliffside Coalition has been trying to meet with her over a year. Nada. Not 15 minutes. Nothing. One of her major contributors is Duke Energy. So it's unless we start holding our politicians really accountable, which means we have to give them more pain, give them more, be demanding attention, the same in something that will offset the kind of what they're getting from the utilities. And the utilities have all the lobbyists they can buy that they're going to need. They have all the money that they can put through the political system. That's what we've got to offset, and that's the whole challenge of citizen activism now, is how to make the politicians accountable, and how to put Cliffside and phasing out coal and the other things we need to do to control global warming. How to put that on the political agenda? We're in an election year. 2010 will be a huge election year, not only nationally, in which the Senate and the House are up for grabs, but on a statewide basis, in which the Senate is up for grabs. Speaking nonpartisanly here, the Republicans are horrendous, are in the denial camp on global warming, and the Democrats are on the many of them are on the "can you buy me out of this issue" camp.
Oh, good.
So there are some great legislators who have guts and who are fighting over there, and of the 170 legislators, we're talking five or six of those. of who are really stand up on the issues and fight for it. And they can, on some bills, they can, you know, they can get much closer to a majority in the House and Senate. But it is enormously uphill, and that only happens when you're up against huge vested interests. You only win if you have really a huge citizen mobilization and a lot of attention, and that's our job.
That's
what's got to happen. We have got to have a social movement in this state and in this nation and in this world that is about climate, about social justice and climate change, and we call that together climate justice. But it has to be broader than that. It has to deal with the growing inequality in our country. It has to deal with our crazy horrendous foreign policy.
We can no longer separate these issues into these little isolated.
It's got to deal with the racism that is still rampant, the anti-immigrant xenophobia that is rampant. It's got to be that kind of joined up social movement.
Okay. And NC Warren, where can people get more information, get more informed? One thing I want to mention is that tomorrow there is an environmental seminar about, it is brought to this area by the Pachamama Alliance,
right.
Which is, if you know more about it, tell it. I know I've signed up for it. It's going to be at the Friends Meeting House here in Chapel Hill. And since I don't have the information, their contact information, and there were some problems with the website, anyone who's interested can call me, and I'll get you the information, person to contact. My phone number is 919-619-6546.
And I went to this right before Christmas. It's great. It's very powerful. It not only has a whole lot of information, but really on what's happening to our world and our climate and the justice issues involved in that, but it really engages both the mind and the heart in how to think about this.
And that to me is where it's got to go. Really, we've got to.
I mean, we have to. You know, people look for meaning in their lives, and sometimes the meaning comes crashing down on us. This is stuff we absolutely have to focus on if we care about our fellow human being and the progress of our world and our societies. The Pachamama Alliance and this program does a great job of really focusing people on that. But that's what we've got to be doing, and we've got to be doing it in every way, starting in our own towns, and it's got to be political, and it's got to be building the movement.
Are we talking about something like the transitional neighborhood revolutions that were written up in Yes Magazine? These communities that are taking it on themselves, they're not waiting for the politicians, they're saying this is what we're going to do to make this happen.
I think that's important. I think curly light bulbs are important. I think all of that's important, but and people hate politics for all the good reasons, but it's got to be political. Those are our representatives.
Okay.
Those are our representatives. They make the policy. They control what happens in the world.
Okay.
We've got to control that again.
I agree wholeheartedly, and I hope you'll come back. We'll talk more about the actual political organizing, about what's going to happen in this coming election year. And Pete, thank you very much. This is Pete McDowell of NC Warren, and the NC Warren, you can visit their website at www.ncwarren.org. And thank you. You've been listening to The Wake Up Call. Join us again next week.